Well, welcome to this workshop. Facilitating open communication with parents. I assume you all got a handout. If you didn't, they're over here on the chair. We've already heard quite a bit about communicating with parents this week. The committee for the week told me that was not intentional. It just kind of happened. So probably some of the stuff you hear in this workshop, you've already heard before. I'm assuming that you believe that communicating with parents is important. I believe that it's important. I haven't always done very well with it. In fact, my first several years of teaching, I think I did very poorly at communicating with parents because I was scared of them. I didn't know what to think of them. I didn't know what they thought of me quite. And I didn't do very much of it at all. And I'm not here as the expert now. I still feel like I don't do real well with this sometimes. But I'm here to share some ideas that I've gleaned from other people at workshops like workshops like this, Teachers Week, and other places, from other teachers. Some of the teachers at my own school, I gave them a questionnaire to fill out in preparation for this, and I heard back from 3 out of 10, so I was impressed. That's pretty good for teachers. So these are some of their ideas, some of my ideas, some things that I've done that have worked, haven't worked. I also hope to have some time at the end to for you to ask questions or maybe share an idea that you've tried that's worked. I hope to be able to do that. I'd like to start by just talking about the significance of communication. First of all, I think parents are primarily responsible for their child's education. Now, you might question that. And in fact, my wife questioned that. I had her look over my notes and she said, "What do you mean by that?" What I mean by that is that parents are responsible to see that it's done, that education is done, and that it's done well. You're the teacher. You're responsible to actually stand in front of the students and teach. You don't expect their parents to come in and do that. That'd be ridiculous. They might as well homeschool then. But they're responsible to see that you're doing a good job of teaching, and that what you're teaching is done in a biblical way, a godly way. That you're doing what Glennon was talking about. Teaching and modeling Anabaptist faith. Just a few verses that I included in your notes. Deuteronomy 6:6-7. "These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up." And Moses said that in relation to the law that he was giving them. He wasn't saying this directly in relation to reading, math, science. But if we're going to, I believe that all of whatever we do at school needs to be done in a biblical way, a godly way. There is a godly way to have recess. There's a godly way to teach science, a biblical way. And so we divide it into these different subjects, different categories, but really it's all about living for God. Psalm 78:5-6, "For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should teach them to their children, that the generation to come might know, even the children yet to be born, that they may arise and tell them to their children." And again, Ephesians 6:4, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." So parents, and I think primarily fathers, are responsible. And so if that's true, if they're primarily responsible, then we ought to be talking to them about what's going on in school. On the flip side, a lack of communication, I think, brings misunderstanding and frustration. Parents and teachers have to agree to the same goals, agree to serve the same purposes. Just this past year, I had a student go home and tell her parents that Mr. Krauss said that not all of the Bible was true. Well, of course, that parent was alarmed. And so we talked about it and discovered that really what I had said was that you can't take every single word in the Bible literally. When it says our God is a rock, well, you can't go out and find him. You know, find which rock is God. That's not meant to be taken literally. It's a figure of speech. If we hadn't talked about that, and that parent just assumed that Mr. Krauss doesn't believe that all the Bible's true, we could have some real problems. So we have to talk. I do believe that all the Bible's true. I do believe that God meant what he said. And that we need to take it, interpret it literally, when it's not absurd to do that. But we have to communicate. And if we're going to serve the same purposes, then it also means we have to think about not just the needs of that individual student, but also the class and even the whole school. What's best for the whole school? And if we aren't doing that, if we're not talking about that, parents like their children most of the time. And it's hard sometimes for parents to believe that my child is really as bad as what you're making him out to be. Sometimes they're going, yeah, huh, I can believe that. But other times they tend to be protective. And especially if they don't know you very well. They don't trust you quite. Because if you're new to the community, when I first started teaching at Maranatha, most people didn't know who I was. And so they didn't trust me. And I didn't blame them. And so if we need to help parents understand that, yes, I care about your child and your child is very precious to me, but there's other people here too that we have to think about. I have a whole class full of students and we have a whole school too that we have to think about. And so we have to be talking or else there's, frustration. And along with that, I think that communication between parents and teachers is essential to the child's success at school. I think, and Glendon talked about this morning a little bit, that often a problem can be addressed much more quickly and effectively if we just talk to the parents. And if we're working together. Many times I've had a problem with a student and I've talked to the parents. Takes care of the problem. And now as the administrator at Maranatha, I get to help other teachers with this a lot more. And we had a little second grade boy who is adopted and has had quite a few issues to work through. And he was having a little trouble at school. And the teacher was talking to him, working with him, and wasn't really getting anywhere. And so I encouraged her to call the parents. So she called the mom, talked to the mom, and explained what was going on. And the mom listened. And that evening when the student got home, the mother talked to him and asked him, what's going on? And found out that really what was bothering him was some things that had happened to him before he came to live with him. And when he was able to talk about that, he took care of the problems at school. So it helps the child to succeed. We can enjoy school, they can enjoy school a lot more when we're communicating with their parents. So I think that it's very, very important that we actually do communicate. How do you do that? How do you communicate? And what are some things that help with communication? Well, first there, I think that parents and teachers must know the child and each other. If I know the parents of my children and they know me, it's a lot easier to pick up that phone and call them, or to write the note to them, or to talk to them at PTF, or at church when I see them. And if I know the child and understand the child, and the parents know the child and understand the child, it helps. How do you do that? Well, teach at the same school for a long time. It helps, especially if it's not your home school. I moved into my wife's community, but the school I teach at isn't the school she attended. She attended a beachy school in the area that was closer to where she lived, and I teach at a different school. And where we go to church, there's only a very few families that actually send their students to my school. So most of the people at that school didn't really know me. And like I said, at first they didn't trust me, and I didn't know if I could trust them. I didn't know them. But I've been there 9 years. And over that time, we've learned to know and to trust each other. But you also have to seek to know them. Because often parents are a little bit afraid of the teacher too, especially if it's a new one. Because they don't know you. They don't know if they can trust you. And so you have to be intentional about getting to know them. Now that I have children in school, our three oldest are in school. And my wife and I have noticed that it's the teachers who know us outside of the school setting. I mean, I work at school, so they all know me as a fellow teacher. But it's the teachers that know me outside of the school setting that are the most comfortable coming and talking to me or my wife about a problem that they're having with our child. Because they know us, and they know that we're okay with what they bring to us. And they know that we want to work with them and help them. If we're going to know each other, we have to welcome the parents. Invite them to come to school. Invite them to come to your classroom parties or fun activities you're doing, or if you're going on a field trip, invite them to come along. And maybe you can even involve them in the planning of the activity. I know that sometimes teachers feel like if the parents come along, then you have to babysit them too. Especially if they weren't involved in the planning of it. They don't really know what's going on either. They don't know where we're going next. They don't know what's supposed to happen. So you have to be telling them what's next too, and making sure they're all getting to wherever you're going. And that's maybe true. But maybe that's because you didn't communicate with them enough beforehand about what's going on. That helps with that. If you really don't want your parents there, they're going to pick up on that. They're going to sense that. And they're not going to come. And that makes it hard. That puts distance between. Makes it hard to communicate. So welcome the parents. Seek to love the brethren. 1 Peter 1:22 says, "Since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit in sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart." 1 John 3:14, "We know that we've passed from death to life because we love the brethren. He who does not love his brother abides in death." That can be hard. Sometimes to love the parents of your children. I remember some of my first years at Maranatha, we had a family there who kind of had a reputation for sticking up for their children. And I remember I had their daughter in my class, and it was time for parent-teacher conferences, and I was scared. Because I knew they had this reputation, and so they come for their conference, and we sit down, and we start talking a little bit, and it wasn't long until the mom starts in and just pretty much chewed me out. How do you love someone in that situation? How would you love them? Okay, with God's help. But what do you do? Prayer is amazing. It really is. Even in that moment when you're sitting there and the mom's right across the table from you or whatever, chewing you out.
Right.
And while you're praying, you're probably doing that silently. And what else are you doing? Should be listening. I've learned that if you just listen, most of the time they'll go off and they need to get it out. So they get it out, and then it's better. Somehow it's better. Another time, I had a dad who, my son and his son were having a little trouble getting along in school, and it was a problem. And we were talking to our son, and we were trying to work with it, and we were talking with the teacher. But it got to the point where this other dad was just pretty upset, and he called me up. And I don't remember how long it was. My wife says it was 2 hours. I don't remember it being quite that long, but I know it was a long time. And he was just gone. And he was angry. And I didn't say much, just, you know, Let him know I'm still there. I'm listening. And when he started out, he was way up here at level 10 somewhere. And over the course of the phone call, he started coming down. And by the end of the phone call, he apologized to me for the way he had acted with him. Just listen. I have another patron family who, right now, who I know the parents don't really like me. They haven't told me that, but they've told my board that. And they've complained to the board about me in various occasions, and that's difficult. It's difficult to love someone when you know they don't like you and they wish you weren't in the school. But we're called to love the brethren. No matter what their problems are, no matter what their idiosyncrasies are, no matter what their upbringing is or their beliefs, I've had, our school's not a church school, and so we've had a fair number of other families from non-Mennonite families send their children to our school. They don't believe the same way we do and everything. And I'm the Bible teacher, and so, you know, these issues come up sometimes. How do you handle those kinds of situations? Right now we have a patron family, and I'm not sure if we should have them there or not, but we do. The parents are divorced and remarried. Okay, that's a sticky subject then with that family. We actually have a few students at our school from the Lancaster Conference Church. They don't wear coverings. Now, one of the girls, just this past year, did start to wear just a little doily. It's not very big, but it's a step. She's the only girl in our youth group that does it. And I don't think she just does it at school from what she's told me. Okay, but those kind of issues can be really sticky. How do you love those parents? And like you said, it's with God's help. I can't just work up a love for these people. Can't do that. But as I pray and ask God to help me love them, He will. So love, brethren. Real briefly there, in high schools, and I don't know how many of your schools are this way, but if you teach by subject, that's how we did it at our school, the students are moving around from room to room. I think then communication becomes even more important, and yet I think we tend to do less of it, for whatever that's worth. So we have to know each other. We have to know the child. Teachers also must seek insight from the parents. Seek insight. Ask them for advice. Remember that you are partners with the parents. You need to be with them, not against them. Personally call each parent before the year begins. Pick up the phone and call them. And ask them about their child. I'm going to have your daughter in my class this year. I just wonder what can you tell me? What's she good at? What does she like? What problems have you been having with her? Maybe at home or even last year at school. Ask them what kind of discipline works. London was talking about discipline this morning. Not every form of discipline works the same for each child. So ask them about that. Find out what kind of problems they're dealing with at home. Because you're probably going to see the same problems at school. And I know you don't have much time before school starts. You might be going, yeah, but I got so much to do before school. I can't do that yet. That'd take a lot of time. And it would. Maybe. So if you can't get it done before school starts, you can do it later in the year. But I would recommend that. Seek insight from the parents. Learn from them. When you're having a problem, you must communicate with the parents. And again, Glendon talked quite a bit about this morning. But when you're having a problem and a student is causing trouble, a veteran teacher told my wife before we were married, she taught school, and she was privileged to work with, we called her Miss Ellen. Ellen Crosser, been teaching for, you know her. She is one of the best, if not, yeah. And my wife was privileged to teach with her, and Miss Ellen told her, so they actually carpooled to school, and on the way home one day, my wife was talking about something that happened to school, and Miss Ellen said, if you are still feeling frustrated with a student after the school day is over, then it's big enough to call the parents. And so my wife started doing that. And if she was still frustrated after the school day was over, she would call the parents. It helped an awful lot. When you call the parents, tell them what's going on. Tell them, relay the details, respectfully, kindly, but be honest with them. And again, ask for their advice. Be humble enough to learn from them. Some of you aren't parents. And so, you know, you don't have the experience that they have. So be willing to learn from them. Again, I've learned that when I call a parent with a problem, I'll tell them the problem, and then before I give any kind of solution, I'll ask them, what do you think would help? What do you think we ought to do? Sometimes they'll have ideas and they'll give them. Other times they're, oh, you don't know. What do you think? Sometimes they have really good ideas too. Stuff that I hadn't thought of. So I need to learn. Learn from them. Once the problem's solved, don't end the communication there. Stay in communication with them. After the problem is solved, and celebrate the growth with the parents. Sometimes parenting is discouraging work. Sometimes we wonder if we're getting across anything that we're trying to teach. And it feels like you're not making any progress. And sometimes a teacher can see progress that a parent doesn't. And so, do let the parents know of progress that you see, especially if you've told them that we have this problem, we're working on it. And if you see change, you see growth, maybe you see the repentance that Glendon was talking about, make sure you tell the parents. At our school, we have what we call progress reports. 6 weeks into the quarter, we send home these progress reports. 3 weeks later, they get a report card, but progress report, it's partly academic, but it's mostly the character. Problems you see in a student or things they do really well in. Or, you know, there's a section at the top for problems. And then there's two sections for positive stuff, good things. But when I first started teaching at Maranatha there, it seemed like these progress reports were a bad thing, and that's all they were. If you got a progress report home, sent home, oh boy, you were in trouble. And I remember thinking, you know what, these things can be a positive thing. There's two sections there for good stuff. And I remember one of the first times I sent home progress reports, I'd sent home some good ones, some positive ones, and I remember a student came up and said, you sent a progress report home for me? And I said, yeah. You did? Yeah. Oh boy, what did I do now? And I looked at him and I said, you don't have any idea. You're assuming it's a bad one. You don't know if it's good or bad. And I didn't tell him that it was a good one, but it was. I knew he'd find out from his parents. But he was just shocked. He said, you mean you would send home a good progress report? And I said, yeah. And that was fun. Okay? Praise him. Praise the parents for what they've done for the students. Like I said, parenting is hard work. Let parents know if their child's been humiliated in front of the class or if they're often taunted by peers, because sometimes that can create problems at home and the parent has no idea what's from. I know this kind of stuff shouldn't happen in a Christian school, but sometimes it does. And I think if you're just upfront with parents about this happened, and maybe it was even your fault, maybe you humiliated the child, not intentionally, but maybe you did. If you call the parents and say, I'm sorry, this is what happened, and explain it humbly, it can prevent a lot of problems, a whole lot of problems. And it can help the parents understand what the child, what's going on. Finally, I do have one after this. Letter D there. Regular methods of communication are essential. And I don't know how many of you have like a parent-teacher conference once or twice a year or something like that, or parent-teacher fellowships, or like I said, we do the progress reports 6 weeks into each quarter. And those are good. Those are regular methods of communication. Although, I tend to be more quiet. And then I can go to a parent-teacher fellowship and not talk to any parents. And it wouldn't bother me a whole lot, and that's not a good idea. I tend to be quiet. Sometimes people don't believe that about me. But when I was a teenager, I was very, very shy and quiet. You knew me then. So I have to make conscious effort to talk to parents. At Parent Teacher Fellowship, I have to intentionally walk up to a parent and initiate a conversation. It doesn't come naturally for me. It does for my wife. It's very easy to walk up to somebody and talk. This is difficult for me. And I don't know you. I don't know if it's hard for you or not. If it is, learn to do it anyway. And learn to listen. I can't emphasize that enough. Listen. Glendon talked about with a student, learning to listen to the student and getting their perspective. Do that with your parents too. Listen to them. Give your parents your cell phone number and your email address if you have one. You can maybe do that at the beginning of the year when you call them. Say, hey, I just want you to have my cell phone number and my email address so you can contact me, or my home number or whatever. Probably they have that already. That way they can talk to you if they want. For some parents, it's hard for them to pick up the phone and call. And they'd rather send an email. Some people prefer that method of communication. Then that's fine. But make sure they know that. Send home weekly reports of your classroom. I don't do that. I've never done it, but I have a teacher in my school who does. Every week she sends home a folder. In that folder are all tests and quizzes that they took that week. any papers that she graded. She puts in there any a list of any tests or quizzes coming up the following week. She lets them know what Bible memory is due the next week. If there's going to be a birthday party or something like that, she put information in there about that. And I think she sends it home Monday or Tuesday. And the parents are supposed to look at the stuff, sign the folder, and send it back to school. Of course, they can sign a folder without really looking at the stuff, but let's trust them with that. But it's just a way that she tries to keep that little bit of communication there. And again, that's not enough. That's all you do. That's not enough. But it helps. Let parents know what you'll be studying in the near future and invite them to come and talk, share their knowledge. And we had a whole workshop, I didn't sit in on it, but about involving parents in the classroom. I wish I could have been in on that one. But parents know a lot. They have a lot of experiences that you and I can't experience. We don't have the time or the resources. I remember I used to teach a Pennsylvania history class. And I remember I had a parent come in who knows an awful lot about local Indian history. He just loves local Indian history. He studied it and read up on it. And I had him come in and talk to the students. They loved it. And he did too. And we've had patrons come in and talk about their travels to other countries. Or maybe they were a missionary in a foreign country. Or studying geography. Or something like that. Have the parents come in and talk. Lots of ways you can get them to come in. I just have there other progress reports. That's, again, something we do at our school. Just a way of trying to communicate a little bit how the children are doing. And I just have a note there, don't limit your communication to the required or the normal. Don't be predictable. Encourage parents of growth. Let them know. And then the last point there, asking versus telling. How you go about it makes all the difference in the world. Some of this is psychological, but most people don't like to be told what to do. You know, if you're having a pizza party and you want the children to pay for it or parents to pay for it, you can send a note home saying, we're having a pizza party, it costs $3 per child, please bring the money in by Friday. And most parents will do that. They'll do what you told them to do, send the $3 in. Or next week for art class, we're going to be doing finger painting. Please send in old clothes or old shirt or something. So, you know, they'll do that. But if we ask them, and this also goes along with the whole discipline thing, if we ask them for their advice, it makes all the difference in the world. We have to partner with the parents. And if we're going to do that, we have to communicate with them. For most of us, communication with parents will take a lot of intentional effort. You might feel like you don't have time for it. And you probably don't. Teachers are busy people. I know that. Teaching takes a lot of energy. You might be afraid of the parents. If you are, they're probably equally afraid of you. But regardless, we have to do it. We can't neglect it. The reality is that if we build these relationships with parents, and if we communicate with them, we'll actually have fewer problems and more time to do the things we really want to do. Part of our responsibility as teachers is to partner with the parents. And in our school handbook, we actually have a little Latin phrase that I think Lyndon used, in loco parentis. We work in place of the parent. If that is really true, that if I stand in front of my classroom in place of the parents, I better know what they want to happen. Now, of course, I can't go against what God wants. But there's a lot of flexibility in how you teach and what you teach. And in what you emphasize as far as character traits and that kind of thing. If I'm going to take the place of the parent, I better know what they want. What are your questions or comments, things you've tried that have worked well? Or maybe a warning, something you've tried that didn't work well? And it's probably not really, really all that productive, the hour-long phone conversation. Sometimes it helps to say, I don't have long to talk. I've only got 10 minutes, 5 minutes. But I just wanted to call and let you know or talk to you about this. Sometimes they still, I've had parents, you tell them that, and they still want to talk for 25, 30 minutes, even though you told them you have 5 or 10. But that might help. Another thing that might help is to do a letter instead, a note. Any other input?
Working with someone kind of cultures like that is that it's actually valuable for them just to spend that time talking about this because they know that they value them, they value their opinion and what's happening in their lives, and it builds respect.
So even though you sit on the phone for an hour and you're sitting there thinking, I don't have time for this, I've got papers to grade. That is actually valuable time. Yeah. It's good. It's building the rapport with parents.
What do you have, like, when your parents doesn't feel like they're in love, their whole parenting conference, and then they're like really venting?
We've had those situations at our school where neither parent comes regularly. Can't hear, okay. So her question was, what if you have parent-teacher parents who don't get involved? For instance, if you have parent-teacher conferences and only the one parent comes. And I'm assuming that's consistent. You know that year after year it's only going to be the one parent coming. It's difficult, and the longer you've been out of school, the more you can do this, but sometimes we have to teach the parents. That's hard. For a young person, it's more difficult. And that actually, that responsibility falls more on the principal or school board to do that, but yeah, sometimes you can't change that. Work with what you have. Do the best you can. I know oftentimes, at least in my experience, oftentimes the mom comes and not the dad. That usually works because the dad's busy working or whatever, or just doesn't care. And that affects the children. They know the dad doesn't really care, and often they don't care as much either. Yeah, sometimes there's not a lot you can do with them, in my experience. Again, So what happens if they don't show up? They're required. Okay. We do the same thing. We, you know, this person gets a 15-minute slot, but some of them just don't bother showing up. That's good. Yeah. The teacher calls and says, "Oh, when can we come back on the clock?" Depressing. Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit like sending the child to the principal's office. Whoa, this is pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Sometimes boards are reluctant to do that. They don't want to be that involved, but they should be. Okay. Maybe I didn't say it. Trying to find another line down here. There it is. Relay the details respectfully and ask for their advice. Mm-hmm. Any other questions, comments? Thank you for coming. Can I pray with you before you go? Let's pray. Lord, thank you for these men and ladies whom you've called to teach. And another year is just ahead of us. And we're looking forward to that, and yet probably most of us have a lot to do yet before the school year starts. I pray, Lord, that you would give us the wisdom and the energy to know how and when to communicate with the parents of our students. Lord, take away our fear of talking with them. Lord, keep us humble enough to learn from them. Help us to keep our eyes fixed on you so that we don't become discouraged. Thank you for your promise that you will never leave us, you will never forsake us. And thank you for your Spirit that lives in us to teach us and guide us into all truth. I pray this in Christ. Amen.